It is pretty clear now at VaynerX that there is zero reason ever to verbally undress someone in a meeting. I would love for somebody to stand up right now and explain to me why being mean in a business meeting brings any value. It's just completely illogical. I understand why people do it. Fear is a motivator in the micro short term. It is the most disgusting weapon that a human can use. So leadership's an incredibly exciting topic for me to talk about, because the truth is, in an alternate life, if I didn't have the one gene of being an entrepreneur, I think that I would be a guidance counselor or a therapist, or I just really love the human of it all. I think I've been good at things because the only lens I have is people. I really don't think about anything else. You know, the reason I've been early in so much stuff is because people are doing things and it hasn't been talked about at scale yet, but because I spend pretty much all of my time paying attention to the popular culture of society, trends, it's just been a huge advantage for me. And then there's just human truths. Leadership is super fascinating for me because I've been on an interesting journey in the last 5 or 6 years personally, which is I've been really successful at it. You know, I was 22 years old when I started running my dad's liquor store, and there was 8 employees, and that's a lot of responsibility when you're opening and closing the store and it's a family business and you're trying to stop people from stealing and there's dynamic. You're a kid, but I'd been there since I was 14, it felt normal. And that company got up to 150 people and it was just normal for me at 26, 28 to manage that many people. Vayner today, Vayner Media is part of a holding company with 7 other companies, but there's now 1,900 employees globally around the world. And for me, it's like normal. You know, to me, leadership starts with every CEO or leader understanding they're actually in the HR business, comma, they do other things. So for me, we did a huge creative offsite on Monday, and I'm making such detailed, nuanced reference points in the meeting, and a lot of the creatives had never worked with me face-to-face or interacted, and they were just baffled by why I knew that, and a couple of them had the courage to come up to me during breaks and like, why do you even know, like, how do you know that? And I'm like, because I talk to the people that work here. Like, you know, when I say in every all hands on meeting, which is often, my inbox is open, email, we will schedule 5, 10, 15 minutes. I think a lot of leaders don't realize how much can be done in 7 minutes. Leadership, I think, has a lot to do with time management. So I think leadership has a lot of things that I think about leadership from this concept of honey empire, or when we were talking about it, like I think about it as gray, not black or white. Most leaders are gonna be either black or white, right? Blue or red. I think a lot about the political nature of our country, of like how much happiness sits in purple, yet everybody wants to go as red or as blue as possible. What I just talked about is the empire part, like the efficiency, the work. But the reality is, it's not empire of honey, it's honey empire. Nothing works unless there's humanity. The number one job of a leader, whether you're at the tippy top or you lead something of any nature, 2 people, 9, the number one job of a leader is to eliminate fear. What's interesting about that is it comes in all shapes and sizes. So much of my success, I thought, for the last 25 years was that I was eliminating fear. This is why everything has worked. Until I had a really, really dark professional day where I realized 5 or 6 years ago, my lack of candor, because I don't like conflict and I don't like negativity, was actually creating fear instead of eliminating it. Because on Tuesday, right, I'd be like, Alex, I would hug Alex in the hall and be like, you're doing a great job, doing a great job. And then on Friday, I'd be like, Alex, you got 15 minutes? Alex sits down, I'm like, Alex, we're gonna have to let you go. And he's like, you told me on Tuesday I was crushing it. And I would, in my early 20s and early 30s, would blame Alex. I'm like, how did you not know, like, that you've been not doing a good job for the last 3 years? I would almost be like, I would deflect the blame of their lack of self-awareness, but the reality was, I really had to swallow that pill 5 years ago, that the one hole in my game, the tens of thousands of people that have worked for me, the small percentage of 2 or 3% of the people that don't have a good to great point of view on me, all, and I mean all, sat in the category of my inability to be candorous, right? And so I think a ton about the elimination of fear, right? I'm blown away by so many shortcomings of corporate management and like just the world. Like, for example, It is pretty clear now at VaynerX that there is zero reason ever to verbally undress someone in a meeting. There is, I would love for somebody to stand up right now and explain to me why being mean in a business meeting brings any value. It's just completely illogical. I understand why people do it. Fear is a motivator in the micro short term. It is the most disgusting weapon that a human can use. If you sit here today and know, maybe because of the way you were brought up and the way you were managed, or the DNA you got from your grandma, it happens, that you use fear, you really should be A, taking a step back and reconsider that. B, after we just talked about it right now for 2 seconds, you should be ashamed of yourself for ever using it again. And C, if you don't know how to solve this, figure it the fuck out. The reason we call it the honey empire when we talk about leadership is you get more out of honey than vinegar. You may get short-term wins in vinegar, but you will not get sustained wins with vinegar. So, but then there's the opposite side, the me, that everything's bubblegum and rainbows and you're putting it all on you, but you're quietly building resentment. You have to work on what I've worked on for the last 5 years, which is the ability to deliver what we call kind candor. But I realized that candor, that corporations love to stand up, was really for a lot of people an excuse to be mean, an excuse to control someone that they're managing so that they don't propel. You know how much human psychology goes into a manager that consciously knows the person they're managing is more talented than them? There's a subconscious repression going on there because they don't want it to happen. So candor all of a sudden became manipulation. So candor I always really struggled with. Somehow, some way, because I was working on myself, I sold myself on the concept of this term called kind candor. And it's transformed our company. Because what was happening for us was, you know, I'm the CEO of the company, I'm the founder of the company, so you're listening to me for 10 minutes here, I think you're getting a sense of how we roll. The problem is we were on the opposite side. We created unlimited entitlement. If nobody's getting any critical feedback and nobody's allowed to say anything to anybody, it went the other way. We were two over here. Look, I think here's what it comes down to. At the end of the day, the thing that really works for me and what I see working in other companies, I have been very fortunate to invest in 300-400 companies. I sit on a lot of boards. I'm part of a lot of nonprofits. It really all comes down to some really simple truths. One, unfortunately or fortunately, everything is our fault. I really believe that. I genuinely believe that every single thing at VaynerX, all 1,900 people, that every single thing that isn't working is 100% my fault. I really believe that's leadership. Here's why. I could be mad at project management. I hired the head of project management. Oh, I didn't? The COO did? I hired the COO. Like, there, you have to fall in love with accountability if you have any interest in leadership. You have to fall in love with it. And most people don't want it, especially right now. Pop culture right now is in love with pointing fingers. Everything's about pointing fingers. Most of us here, looking around, we've all now are deep in our understanding of all the things our parents fucked up on. That is like, say, right? Like, we are in deep knowledge of every thought we have about mom and dad right now. My question is, like, when does that stop? Cool. Great. Agreed. Inconceivable that someone is sitting here that doesn't have thoughts about that. My question is, at what age do you take control and fix it for you? And that's how I think about leadership. I think there's such an opportunity if we just get real about it and find that middle. You know, because in one direction or the other direction, it's just not gonna work. And you can see it play out everywhere. But the opportunity is enormous. It's actually comforting. It's actually awesome. Like, this is very countercultural, and this is where I always get caught, because I get clips taken out of context and then shared on social, and everyone's like, this fucking guy. So let me say this in full context. There's incredible happiness that comes along with 100% accountability, because you feel like you're in control. All of it is stemming on the same thing. If you don't feel like you're in control, as a human being, you were unhappy. But then it goes back to accountability. You're actually fully in control. Did you, you know, watching people leave Vayner and give the feed, I read every single exit interview, all of them. Back to HR, comma. I actively and aggressively plead for people to spend time with me in my company. And sure enough, exit interview. Do, and I'm like, why didn't you say something? Employees, especially as you move up, humans, because that's who are the employees, love, and I mean love to complain about shit without trying to fix it. So this leadership thing, of course, goes with us, but let's just take it all the way down to you individually. You're in full control. As somebody who was born in the USSR, you have options. You know, we get very confused about what our lives are, and we're, if, you know, if you're sitting in this meeting right now, in the rankings of the 8 billion people on Earth, you're winning. Right? We have it good. Unfortunately, what's bad is hot right now. That's just how the world works. We, you know, doesn't take long to look at 1968. Like, this is just how the world works. My thing for you all, though, if we're talking about leadership, is the leadership of your own self starts to become the practice that you can deploy for others. Please, please understand how much, how quickly it can get better once you go to full accountability. What am I, every single thing I'm disappointed with, my default in my brain goes into, how did I not put this person in a position to succeed? So that is now leading to the thing I'm frustrated about. What didn't I do? For me, it's normally that I just couldn't deliver the candor. I just passive aggressive at worst, razzy in the middle, or just shutting my mouth and smiling at the lightweight, but it was all the same game. Many of you have that in here. Others, your own pain and frustration, you're deploying on others, right? So that's what you're bringing to the meetings and the energy. We just have to find a way to get all that poison out. You've got to get it out. That's all it ever is. It's just fear. It's just fear. And fear has been weaponized at scale in society, and so it's become normalized subconsciously. And so I think there's a huge opportunity for us to get way more human in the context of business. I see it. I've always seen it. It's very real to me. And I think from the top down, it's just about everyone looking themselves in the mirror and asking how much they're contributing to the fear. Really, I mean that. And it comes in different shapes and sizes. Not being candorous creates it, right? You know, being rude. Like that to me is the one though, like honestly. Like that's the one. Like I promise for all of you, there's nothing good happening about being overly aggressive and rude. It's just not working. In any for you, I mean. You do not know what's going on in someone's home. You just don't know if someone's on the verge of a divorce. You don't know if somebody got a phone call from their favorite cousin this weekend saying they're terminally ill. You just don't know. And we just don't have enough compassion, especially up. Especially up. You just, you know, your manager, in theory, in the context, you feel you shouldn't be the bigger person for them. They're getting paid more and they're more senior, right? But they're still a human dealing with real shit outside of here. And so I think if we can stand up compassion and sympathy and empathy for real, not like some fucking poster we put in the hallway. I remember when tech was getting going and like we had like, I don't know, in 2010 we had like 49 employees and everyone was like 6 years old. It was so young, you know? And people would come and they're like, man, it's so cool here. And then like 6 months later, like, you gotta come to our office, it's cool. I come and be like all cubicles and they're like, and I was like, what? They're like, our office is cool now. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, look, we have a foosball table. And I'll never forget that era when everyone like cleared out a couple cubicles and put table hockey or like, you know, it's like, it was, and I remember thinking, people don't get it. People think tactics work. A poster, I love when people are like, it's in the handbook. Who the fuck reads a handbook, first of all? Like, And more importantly, number two, thank God, I don't like the political unrest, but it gave me an analogy that now gets me across making my point every day of the week. When we're even willing to say it's in the handbook or it's in the brief or it was in the email, I'm like it's right there, it's written word, here it is. I'm like, let me tell you something else that is written word. It's called the Constitution. And if anything, we've proven that 50% of the people can read it and see it this way, and 50% of the people can read it and see it that way. Life is about interpretation. Tactics will not work for leadership. Intent will. Do you actually give a fuck about people? Do you? Or is everything that you're doing completely predicated on the short-term monetary needs you have for the expenses you've created for yourself? That's the fucking question about leadership. You want to know why certain people change as they go up the ranks? It's not necessarily because they think they're somebody. It's they've created more pressure for themselves. When you buy that house slightly outside of your comfort zone because you want to keep up with the Joneses, now you're scared to lose your $213,000 a year job. You've become different because you've got fear. We have to really start changing the conversation of what success is in our society. And that can happen at the business level. I always say at Vayner, look, there's a lot going on outside of these four walls, but we can control what happens here. And I think leadership has to really have a serious conversation of human truths, not the slang words that are starting to emerge. The actual truth of what we're actually talking about here. That's how I see leadership. Thank you.
How does sleep and wellness and sleep health manifest in your life? And as a leader, do you value those things in the lives of your employees?
That's a great question. Couple things with leadership. One of the things my dad always struggled with was back to literally being like, make sure they don't steal. Once we got past that conversation, he got into like, they don't work as hard as me. And I was 15 years old. We used to live 45 minutes from the liquor store. And so we had a lot of talk time. I was 15. And the first time I heard it from my dad, the first time I turned to him in the passenger seat and said, they're not supposed to. I go, if you want employees to work as hard as you, then you should comp them equally to you. If you want people to work as hard as you, they should get the rewards of that. I have never had the expectation. And listen, I'm well documented as one of the hardest things that I've gone through as a public figure is people trying to put hustle porn and things on me when none of my words have ever been about that, but my energy confused people and made them think that. For me, I work very hard and a lot. It's also my singular love outside my family. I love what I do so much, it scares me. I would rather be in meetings all day than skiing, than fucking golf, than watching Top Gun 2, than playing video. It is my love. I'm also aware that the far majority of the human race does not have that luxury. So a couple things. One, I also sleep 7, 8, or 9 hours a night. To me, it's not a, and by the way, comma, I'm also willing if I have to fly somewhere and have a meeting and take, like, there's also nights where I have to sleep 5 hours because that was the circumstance of my situation. I made that choice. To me, I think the people that go hard and all that, they're very confused on this subject matter. It's not how much you sleep, it's what you accomplish when you're awake. The number one joke of my inner friends and acquaintances and family is when they come to Vayner and it's 6:30 and there's not that many people, this is pre-COVID, obviously shit's super different. They would always razz me, be like, where the fuck is everyone, mister? And I'm like, I don't have that expectation of them. I need them to have the balance they want. I also don't judge the reverse. If a 27-year-old wants to be the CEO of Vayner in 12 years and she's willing to go that hard, I can't make the judgment for your ambition. In fact, I believe the ultimate leadership is being prepared at all times for people to change their mind based on their ambition. I have tons of 25-year-olds that sit down with me like, Gary Vee, I'm gonna have your job one day. I'm like, let's fucking go. Great, please, I'd love to go do some other shit, you know? And then at 29, they're really about that life. And they're like, I need more money, da 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 da. I'm like, great, you're doing it, let's go. And then at 32, they fell in love. And all of a sudden, they're not there, you know, at 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. And all of a sudden, they're not emailing me at 11 p.m. And that's me, I get happy. I have no interest in dictating one's interests and ambitions. I just have responsibility to reverse engineer it in real time.
Super excited to see you here today. Thank you. I have to say I'm a massive fan of your teachings and your content. I think it's so important that you're out in the world what you are.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled that you're here with us today. I am also a fellow lover of people and lover of people through my management and my leadership.
Yes.
And I'm absolutely not a rookie manager. I've been in retail now for coming up on 20 years.
Love it.
I entered the industry at a very different time when it was about like keeping your people in line.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
Kind of snapping that, that leash. So seeing this kind of global movement towards this kind of human first, kind of really genuine sorts of leadership is really refreshing to leaders like myself. What advice would you have for people that are maybe, I don't want to say leaning too far into that, but that are you know, trying to temper the concept of productivity, like you were saying, kind of reverse engineering what that role looks like, and the kind of innate tie back to the human nature of leadership?
It's why I'm talking about gray instead of black or white. Everyone who's like, you gotta be in the office 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. I mean, you know, I had a drink with somebody and like, they were really struggling. They're not 70, they're like in their 40s and like, Gary, I know you talk about all this people stuff, but she was like, I'm just asking people to come into the office Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and everyone's acting like I'm trying to make them work 150 hours a week. And I'm like, shit changes. We need all of August off. We don't want to work, you know, we only want to work 3 days a week, kind of. It's just merit. It's just merit. It is what it is. Like, I love how we're baffled that this is how it works in work. Yet, if I told you, okay, here's the two scenarios. You eat healthy, cut down your carb ratio to your protein, get tight and eat cleaner. You go to the gym 7 days a week and you do it properly. You get proper sleep and you do right. And your body and health is better than the person that eats dog shit all the time, never goes to the gym and barely sleeps. And we're all like, yeah. Yet for some reason, like the person that works efficiently and smart and works for 63 hours a week, beating the person who doesn't, who works 35 hours a week, fucks with us a little. That's just merit. For me, the purple's very easy because I don't get, it was the way I finished the last one. It felt sweeter on the last one. This one was a little bit more with the empire, but it's kind of like, I'm not here to judge anyone. I'm here to listen to what you want your life to be about, but I am not your parents. That's the problem. Parenting got crazy in the last 25 years. We decided 8th place trophies was a good fucking idea. You know what that means, right? Eventually you grow up and you go into the real world and you're like, yo. And I'm like, yo, what? I'm here. I'm like, great, what are you gonna do? Like, we've lost merit. And with losing merit, we've created enormous entitlement. And we decide to blame everything but ourselves. So to me, it's been very easy to find the balance. It's just communication. It's like, what are you about? By the way, this is why I wanna redefine success. I think it's remarkable to make $57,000 a year, live within those means, and smile every day. We need to find that. It's real. Like, for me, it's fun to go hard because it's my game, but I would have equally been thrilled if that's not how my chemicals played out, and I would have been super content. So we just have to have more, like, it's just about the real combo, right? We have to balance entitlement with responsibility with compassion and empathy. We've got to find the balance. But the problem is everybody's pushing so hard in opposite directions. You know, each side of this conversation of like overcoddling versus merit, each side thinks that they keep pushing further to their side, it will fix the reaction when reality is you just have to go to the middle and it fixes. The reason shit's working for us is I'm in the middle. When somebody comes flying into my, this is a problem, like, did we investigate it properly? Like, you have to care about it in all ways. And I think we're just on tilt on both sides of it. And everything's now become like a stance. I'm like, the peanuts in the fucking lunchroom is not a fucking political stance. Like, and then they're like, but there's people allergic to peanuts. I'm like, oh, good point. Like, you just talk. You just talk. And so I think we just need a lot more dialogue, and you do it on a one-to-one basis. You know what I mean?
What are your thoughts on the fear that AI might disseminate the workforce?
It won't disseminate the workforce, but AI is the tractor. AI is the tractor. And for the people who understand what I'm saying, here it is. Most people worked on farms back in the day. And then a tractor came out. And everyone's like, fuck that. This is gonna ruin the world. We're all out of fucking jobs. And then people found new jobs. So what do I think? I think you can have any opinion you want. Technology doesn't give a shit about your opinion. It's gonna do what it's gonna do. So you're more than welcome to be an ostrich and put your head in the sand and decide this is not gonna happen, but this shit's already happened and it's not gonna stop. So if you do a job that AI is capable of doing soon, you should think about that. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, do you understand I gave this same keynote in 1997 and the only difference, and I'm being serious, the only difference was a couple things. One, it was at the Springfield, New Jersey Chamber of Commerce and there was 3.5 people there. And number two, the analogy I used then was, look, if you're the top salesman or saleswoman for the Yellow Pages, you might want to consider what Yahoo and Google are doing. AI is going to do a lot of shit. And it should. And I love the hypocrisy. I love the hypocrisy. You love technology when it works for you. And it's like, fuck technology. I'm like, don't order from Seamless, dick. You love that. Yeah, like, don't use a fucking car. Go walk to the restaurant for 29 minutes. I mean it, we talk dumb shit. We are selective as fuck. We are the greatest era of hypocrites ever. Like, and so we have to reconcile that. So what do I think about AI? I think it's coming, and I think it's coming fast. And it's gonna be awesome, and there's gonna be certain rule changes, and humans have proven to me through the last thousands of years that they have the ability to adjust to the new reality and deal with it. We are the most underrated thing on earth. The human being is by far the most underrated thing on earth. The amount of times, what do you think about this thing that has been said is a drillion, and we're still here and thriving, and yes, there's a billion things that are bad. Anybody here really fired up to go back 100 years and live in that era? It was worse. And so we just gotta keep building. And instead of asking everybody else to contribute to the good of society, why don't you contribute? That. Can we sneak a couple more in?
And my question for you is around integrity and how important you feel that it is to operate with integrity as a leader.
That's a great question. You know, this one's kind of like tough, and I appreciate the question because it's kind of like when you ask that in my brain, I'm like, well, that's oxygen. That's oxygen. Like, who the heck is gonna follow anyone the second they feel that their integrity has been compromised? We aren't capable of that unless we ourselves have our integrity already compromised, right? So I think of it as oxygen, you know? You know, it's been funny. I'm a big believer in intent. I mentioned it earlier. I'm like, it is like my religion. But I had an employee, Steve Unwin, who worked for me, who really advanced my thinking on it. Like, you know, we're just chilling one day. He's on my team, he's on my content team. It was early when I re-brought back the Ask Gary Vee show and kind of after the wine content early, my career started being more regular, 2014, 2015 in my content. And he's like, Gary, like, you still have to act on your intent. And it was valid. You know, like to me, I value it so much because I think so many people struggle with good intent because good intent comes in the ability to care about others besides what their self-interest is, and that's just a big hurdle. But the truth is you have to execute on it. So people love to say they have integrity, but it is the actions of that truth that become the actual judge and jury of it. So I think it's major. It's major. I think what's more interesting about that question is, do we have a culture here when somebody feels that their boss or their boss's boss has compromised their integrity that we feel safe to go talk about it. That. So the reason the currency works in leadership in, at Vayner at the level that it does that I'm very proud of is everyone in our world knows that, especially VPs and above, the most senior employees know that if they're trying to suppress something to going to me or to the people and talent team, that which is what we call HR. By the way, what was so cool about growing up the first 15 years of my career outside of corporate is everything, I was naive to everything. I remember when we had like started building a company, I'm like, oh, we're getting big, like maybe we should have an HR department. You know, because I would just do everything back in Wine Library. It was a family business. And we were like at 150 people. And like my brother was 11 years younger and a little bit more polished. He's like, I think we should have HR. I'm like, I'm HR. He's like, you're also the CEO. Like, we need you doing other shit. I was like, all right. I was like pumped. I'm like, I can't wait to have the all hands on meeting just like in this format. I'm gonna be like, we got HR now. I thought, literally thought that I was gonna be carried out of the meeting and celebrated. And I was like, and we're now gonna have HR. And I was like, brown, brown. And because it was so family, I was like, it wasn't like this. It was like I was like, what's the, what? And they're like, HR is the worst. I'm like, it's the worst? They're like, HR fires you. I'm like, they do? I didn't know anything. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And so like, we didn't even call it HR. We called people and talent. Like we like legitimately have to create a world. It's almost like how America's system worked for quite a long time and still does on paper. I need leaders, me, and the HR department to be three separate entities to not create what I'm scared of, which is people are scared to say something about anything because they're gonna get fired. It's crazy. Like the way I thought about it was, I remember the first five or seven big debates between a boss and an employee where it wasn't clear through all the data and research what happened, I fired the boss every time. All seven times. And it wasn't clear. And it got to wit's end, and I had to make a decision. And I fired the boss every time to set the tone that we weren't gonna be cliche and believe the boss over the person underneath them. And it really mattered. It created a culture. And so, to me, that's the interesting part of the integrity question. How important is integrity? It's everything. Everybody here knows that. The more important question is, people sitting in here who feel somebody above them doesn't have integrity, what is the infrastructure and framework and culture here to allow it to be addressed? Hi.
So, and please tell us why. We need to know the why. But which software platform is better? OpenTable or Resy?
Well, I will go with
Resy. Yes, I love Resy too.
Thank you. This might be fun. Back to culture and leadership. One of the things I realized is client services is hard, right? What we do at Vayner is hard. Like, you're just on the receiving end. And one of the things I always tell the team is, I say, team, there's a great Russian saying that my dad says all the time, which is, whoever pays for the song gets to pick the song. And so we're on the receiving end. Client is signing the check, but you're trying to help educate a new truth while they're, and so it's a really interesting challenge. And so some hard days. And I remember thinking, I need to create other things in this company that is escapism. So we do a lot of startups. And so Resy was an idea me and Ben Leventhal, who's a friend of mine, had over, it was really the first idea was a little bit based on what Uber had going on, and it was this concept of maybe getting, you know, we were like, well, first class exists in flying. Like, why can't you actually get a seat to a restaurant in New York that you want if you are willing to pay? Classic, just merit of supply and demand. We built such good software that we were like, forget that business, let's just go kill OpenSea. And so we did that, but we sold that to Amex 5 or 6 years ago. But the moral of the story for that is, what weird thing can you do? My weird thing was, we're gonna start companies occasionally here for the talent to have escapism, to be like fired up about something from 7 to 10 p.m. whiteboarding, because it's not what they do. Like, of course, parties and offsites and things like this, but like other tangible things. I always think that most companies don't allocate enough time, energy, and money to 10% of just left field shit that is actually there to make the 90% act like 110%. It's too fucking robotic. right? So that's, I'm really glad you got to ask that Resi question because I can bring it into like leadership. Leadership's job is to innovate. Of course you can CAC and LTV your way to life. Of course you can create new distribution. Like that makes sense, that you're supposed to. But what about the curveball? You know, as a baseball term for anybody who likes that sport, what about your off-speed pitch? What's gonna mix it up? And so like why can't you also run a flower store downstairs? Why can't you? You can, right? And so like, it's thinking about that complete left field shit that I like thinking about. All right, I gotta go back to work. Thank you for having me.